Welcome back, everyone, to a fantastic new Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We are joined by four incredible artists to talk about a great work happening at one of our favorite places under St. Mark's with Fridge in New York. And joining us today, we have the co-producer and co-founder, Liana Rada Hung, the co-producer, co-founder, and director, Melissa Lewin, the head writer, Nita Thandani, and the showrunner, Ella Stump. They're here to talk to us about Fridge in New York's presentation of episodic theater projects, Bardcore. It's happening now through May 16th at Under St. Mark's, and you can get your tickets and more information by visiting frigid.nyc. We always love having another production that Fridge in New York helps to put on or host, if you will. And so we are so excited about this production. I think the best thing to do is just jump right in. So with that, let's go ahead and welcome on our guests, Liana, Melissa, Nita, Ellis. Welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Thank you so much for having us. We're so excited to talk to you. And we also love Bridget. It's such a cool... They've been so friendly and so nice to us.
I completely agree. And more to the point, I'm so excited that you're all here with your lovely smiling faces on this wonderful Friday. You know, this is going to be a great conversation. I can't wait to learn more about this show, Bardcore. So, Liana, why don't I start with you? Can you tell us a little bit about what Bardcore is and is about?
Yeah, just to start from the real beginning, just because our title is The Episodic Projects Bardcore. So the episodic theater project is, I guess, the name of our collective. So our goal is to make theater bingeable, essentially. So we're playing on a lot of TV themes of like creating episodes of theater. It's a 5-episode series. So it's an epic 5-part story with the same characters, one long story told in 5 self-contained episodes. So our first season is titled Bardcore, and it revolves around the 5 stages of heartbreak. The first episode being denial, the second one being anger, the third episode, which was yesterday, being bargaining, and then next Thursday's episode is depression, and our grand finale, the Thursday after that, is titled acceptance. So that's just a little bit about how that came together. We're hoping to do many seasons of this in the same kind of 5-part structure, but Bardcore is our grand season 1 concept.
Yeah, that is a fantastic answer. I love that. That's exciting. I love the idea of making theater bingeable. That is amazing. Eat your heart out, you know, streaming services. Theater now became bingeable. This is wonderful. Nita, I want to talk to you particularly about, you know, these episodes and the upcoming one we've got. You're the head writer. Where did you come up with the idea for these shows and this theme?
Yeah, so it was really more of a collaboration in our writer's room. It was actually like Ellis who was in charge of bringing the team together and then brainstorming with all of us. And the only guidelines we had were that we have to cover all 5 stages of grief each episode per episode. And we really wanted to focus on heartbreak in a way that we haven't seen it before. So we were kicking around the idea of like focusing on a polycule. I think that was something Ellis really brought into the room, was like, what if it's a polycule? And then the other thing that was really exciting to us was like, okay, so we have to explore this group of people for 5 weeks, right? So let's find a subculture that's very interesting to us because we're stuck with it for a long time. And I had just been to the Renaissance Fair, the New York Renaissance Fair. And I had a lot of friends who like work in Renaissance Fairs all over the East Coast. And I just kind of threw out in the room, I was like, Renaissance Fairs are really cool subculture or interesting subculture. And they actually do have a very interesting history with polyamory. So it kind of just like, after that, no one else had any other suggestions. They all were like, that's it. That's what we're going to do. And we were like conducted a bunch of interviews with all of those like Ren Faire friends. So a lot of the storylines and like little things that happen are from real life, things that have happened to people that I met and spoke to. Yeah. And we really like, it's been really cool to explore this thing that we didn't really, none of us really knew much about. And I feel like Ren Faire Media is really bad. Like there's not a lot of good stuff out there about that subculture and that community. So it's been really fun to like give them that.
That is a brilliant answer. I love that. Melissa, I want to jump to you to start this first question. And I'm curious to know, I mean, you're the co-founder, co-producer, and a director. What has it been like developing these pieces, I should say?
Oh my goodness. It's been so fun and exciting. I think starting from bringing the team together, Leanna and I were like, we always talk about this in the room, but just we very much picked people we trusted who would be down to go through this big concept with us and also make a compelling story. So just getting great theater artists in the room, Ellis, Nita, the rest of our creative team, that is really why the Episodic Theater Project, I think, is really flourishing. And I think developing it was a lot of conversations of just is this going to make sense to our audiences, which the goal of this is to really bring an accessible, a big group, a big audience together. Will my mom understand it? Will the neuro understand it? Everything. It can be a very inclusive environment. And I think we've so far, knock on wood, achieved that. I just knocked on.
I'll just add that the development of it has been very quick as well. We started this, I don't even know, Melissa, November or something, and it all came together very quickly. I come from a background of summer stock theater, so that's just kind of the name of my game, is to do a lot of things really fast and really well at the same time in a very curated way. So our goal was to kind of do this intentional kind of crash course in theater making and see what kind of sparks will fly when we're under these kind of incubator settings. And I think it's been really fun and exciting and spontaneous.
I was actually going to pass it to Ellis because you said something really smart a few weeks ago that I've been thinking about, not to you said something about just how you've been enjoying the process about just leaving perfectionism at the door. And that really stuck with me. And that's such a goal of this process, but obviously making a compelling product, but seeing what happens in a condensed time frame. But you said it better than me, so you say it.
That's hilarious. I was just thinking that too. Yeah, I think it's rare to have spaces cultivated where you're not only encouraged but forced to leave behind perfection with the time constraint of us crafting the story, over a few weeks, and then shifting to in the room, in an actual writer's room, with actors there. Yeah, we just haven't had the time. We're putting up pieces that have been rehearsed for 4 days, which for a lot of writers is your worst nightmare, you become super attached and sensitive, and and all that is so valid and so real. But I think that was a collective fear from the start, but it's been so cool to see everyone have no choice but to release that, and then to feel so proud and inspired and excited by what we have ultimately come up with, because you just you can't have expectations. You can't have standards for yourself. So every week it's been oh my gosh, wow, this came of nowhere. And I mean, it truly wouldn't exist if we if we gave up, had to just push through and throw things out. I started in comedy, stand-up and improv. And it's really, really fun to be doing something that feels more like that. But with all the devices and elements of theater that we all love. So yeah, it's translated into so many areas of life, honestly. I feel it's impacted my day-to-day, my work, my conversations. I'm just yes anding no perfectionism left and right.
I love that. What a wonderful answer. Nita, I want to come to you to kick off this next question. As the head writer, is there a message or thought you hope audiences take away from this piece?
Ellis, I also have this question, but I think actually someone asked us this last week too. And I think the fun thing about the development of these pieces is we are reconfiguring them every week. Our actors too have been they're the most stellar, smart actors I've ever worked with. And so when they do that first reading every Sunday, we just sit there for hours. They're also part of our writer's room, honestly. And so they've actually been helping us figure out what we are saying each episode anyway, too. So with that last one, when we finally get to acceptance, I think we're still figuring it out, but in regard to specifically polyamory and queer love and like the Ren Faire. There was this one person that I interviewed. I won't give their name, but they are one of the only people of color in a leadership position at a Ren Faire. And the one that we have written is still a very like utopian version of what it would be like for people of color who like can work at Ren Faires. There's still a lot of like discrimination, especially with this like idea of like historical reenactment. So I feel like the thing that's been I've been ruminating on a lot is like, what does it mean to take up this space, especially one that has been so like white dominated, white male and cis dominated for a very long time, and like with its origins in a very particular time in history. And so on that specifically, I think it's like, it's really cool to create the version of the thing that like people that I personally know would want to see, a Renaissance fair where like a Black woman is playing Queen Elizabeth, and like no one, that's not a question. That's just like something that exists in the world. But yeah, Ellis, I would also really love for you to jump on this question.
I would love to know what you think the message or thought should be or hope to be that audiences take away.
I mean, I guess like another part of it all that maybe we could tap into is like the heartbreak line, because I think, well, you know, a lot of like these topical issues and yeah, polyamory, like, and like Renaissance fairs, like some of these settings and spaces aren't familiar to everyone, but using a more like universal sort of like emotional through line, I think is an awesome way to bring people into these discussions and encourage them to think and just like observe and like widen their maybe like perceptions, their perspectives a bit more, because like at the core of it, it is about losing people in your life and losing a space, a community that has felt like home to you. And how, like, how do you know how we go about like healing and navigating our like internally and externally? Yeah. I mean, it's just like heartbreak is something everyone knows. And I think going off that, no spoilers, I'm like literally treading the water right now. You know, I think the message in regards to all that has a lot to do with like finding yourself, finding like your values, independence in a way that's like only going to be positive to the other relations in your life. And, you know, and even folk who aren't familiar with like, you know, not everyone has broken up with a polycule, but like we've lost friends in friend breakups, you know, like platonic severances is like, that's so freaking real. And yeah, I mean, it's just like, what are you like willing to put up with? What do you have to put up with versus like deciding for yourself what's best for you is, I think, no spoilers, emotional takeaway. That, you know, there's not a right answer, but that's like why we have 5 hour long episodes to discuss different different like paths.
I love that. Those are some fantastic answers, and I want to snowball off of that, and I want to come to both you, Leanna, and Melissa with this last question for the first part and ask, who do you hope have access to these works? And Leanna, can I start with you first on that?
Yeah, everyone. Is a long story short, like Ellis touched on, like we when Melissa and I were thinking of what story would be interesting enough to tell in five parts, the first thing that came to mind was like love, something about love, because love is universal, right? Love and heartbreak, also universal. Melissa and I spent a lot of time before we even started the Episodic Theater Project just like generally thinking of things that we had in common and things that we love to see. And we're both just like mushy girls at heart and just like love stories. And that's something that is just relatable to anyone. And I think that it's really cool how we have found a way to make a story that is universal while also being like in such an interesting subculture and such a nuanced thing that people have never seen before and are still like able to like grab onto. So yeah, and we've made the tickets like very cheap because we want to create this bingeable nature too. Like we want people to have no excuse to not be able to come to all five if they really want to. We've offered a discount code so people can come and see it. So yeah, we just really want everyone to have a chance to see it. And again, just like zooming out to like the purpose and intent behind this whole thing, we've really been thinking a lot about this moment in theater that we found find ourselves in right now. Like, I have a full-time job working in theater where I'm dealing with this issue every day of like, how do we get audiences to return to go back to theater now that like prices are higher because inflation and materials to make theater have gone up. And so there's a lot of like struggles that are going on behind the scene that we still have not been able to figure out. And like, why would somebody come and go outside and leave the comfort of their home to go see a show when they could just like watch their $10 a month subscription to Netflix, or I don't know how much Netflix actually costs every month, but like
going up every day.
It's a lot less expensive essentially to go watch 2-3 seasons of something in one go. And so we just like really wanted to create this more ephemeral experience and show people like theater can be bingeable. It can be like something you're obsessed with and something that is so unique, and it's we're passionate about it, and this is why. So that's also, we wanted it to be accessible so people could really get that whole experience.
I couldn't have said that better myself. So I just will like snaps to that. But I just will, one other thing I'll add is like a big theme that Leanna and I wanted to discuss with the Episodic Theater Project is like the communal aspect. And like, we live in this like, unfortunately, like very isolated world. And even though we have social media and all these things, like we still continue to feel more disconnected than ever. So like, at least my hope with it is that like, you can like see this show and like maybe see a familiar face like 2 weeks later and be like, hey, oh my God, wasn't that episode crazy? And then maybe that can build a friendship or a relationship. And like, I think we've been able to cultivate that space so far, just based on like the rituals we've done with like, we've had fun pre-show openers and like we've had recaps, and like we have a friend of the fair who like is very much like bridging the gap between audience and performers. And so these small things I think have done wonders and like creating this very like communal space, taking in a story, but like more consistent than seeing a one-time theater show, but versus in on the other end of the spectrum watching like a show in your room on Netflix but like tweeting about it. So it's been really exciting and gratifying.
It's been so cool to like feel that feeling too. Like this, when we did our third episode yesterday, like I was looking at our characters and being like, I feel like I'm attached to you and I know you and I want to know your story in the way that you feel when you're on like episode 10 of whatever you're binging, right? And that is different than seeing a one-time theater experience. So it's been cool to see the things that we love about TV, like being brought over to theater, which is this medium that we love so much.
Second part of our interview, we love to give our listeners a chance to get to know our guests a little bit better. Pull the curtain back, if you will. And I want to start by asking two of you, what or who inspires you? What playwrights, composers, or shows have inspired you in the past or are just some of your favorites? And Melissa, I'm going to actually start with you on this, if I may.
Great. I was thinking in my head, this might be a very cheesy answer, but like the artists in this Zoom room are very inspiring to me at the moment. Like, I know that's like annoying to say, I can give like real answers too, but genuinely, like, I think just being immersed in like ETP world and like picking their brains during rehearsal breaks and like seeing artistic perspectives, that's been like very inspiring to me as an artist. But I'll zoom out a little bit more because, you know, you just know us on this phone call. I would say the works at the Public Theater are always very inspiring to me. I'm an actor primarily, so like female directors really inspire me, like Rachel Chavkin, Lila Neugebauer, and playwrights. I love Annie Baker a lot. Those are just the ones I throw off the top of my head.
That is a fabulous list. I hang in there with you as well. I love the Public Theater. I don't care I never look at what a show's about. I just go. Because I'm just like, just tell me a story.
Yeah.
Some stories have been getting done there. So, chef's kiss. Love that list. Love that. Neetha, what about you? I'm really curious to know what or who inspires you.
Sure. So actually, Ellis calls me like one of the only true multi-hyphenates she knows, which is like a very funny like joke, but there is like some truth to it that I cannot pick like one thing. I like feel like I have to do a little bit of everything. And so like the people that inspire me in that way are like the Issa Raes, the Hasan Minhajs of the world. I think there is a aspect to that like of self-producing and like making things for yourself so you can see yourself. That's like a big thing for me. And then I have a couple mentors, Jacqueline Backus, who wrote Men on Boats and Wives, which was at Playwrights a couple years ago. She was my first Indian teacher that I'd ever had. And now we've like cultivated this like beautiful collaboratorship, and her writing style is very similar to mine. And so when I saw her work and the aspects of like Indian heritage and womanhood that she touched on, I was not the same since, for the better. So my mentors and yeah, people who are like very multifaceted in their work.
That is a wonderful answer. Some great, great artists listed there. Thank you for that. Alice, let me come to you to start this next question. And I'm curious to know, I mean, we've mentioned your role as a way with the show. You're the showrunner, so you've been obviously with it from the go. What is your favorite part about working in the theater?
Oh my gosh. Wow, that's a beautiful question. I mean, it's kind of everything we've been talking about, but the live collaboration of it all is like why I can't stay away. This has been a really like touching, personally meaningful moment to do this project, because I've only like recently been dabbling more in TV film, just purely financially. I do think it's really fun, and I've loved exploring that. But creating art in person all together in one space, like experiencing the spectrum of human emotion, and then like presenting that in front of people. I mean, yeah, it's just truly, there's nothing else like it. And yeah, I mean, I just like, I love people. I love working with people. So that's why I do theater.
I love that answer. As listeners, you can't see, but literally everyone else in the conversation here was like, yes, yes, we're all on that. Feel that. So that's a wonderful answer. Leanna, what about you? What is your favorite part about working in the theater?
It's certainly similar. It's definitely the people and the collaboration that happens in real life, and how just, I don't know. It's just like, it's not the same. I also like came from a background of what, that's not what you said, Alice, but like I started my career, I guess, when I was in school in film and TV, and also for the money, but it's not the same. Like I felt like I was very much just like a little tiny piece of like a big machine that nobody really knew each other. And when I started working in theater and doing, creating art in a more grassroots and personable way, like that was just something that was unparalleled for me in terms of a human experience to have. Like it's just been really lovely to get to know a lot of people. And like I said before, like I work in summer stock theater right now, and so I'm constantly kind of taking on projects and meeting new creative teams like all of the time, and that is just something that I find to be so exciting, like getting to know a whole new group of people, spending like all of this time with them over the course of like a few weeks or a few months, and then putting something up and then taking it all down within like another few months. Like it's such a like crazy process that I am unfortunately addicted to. Cause I just think it's so exciting to get to know this like mass amount of art and be hit in the face with art and be stranded in the middle of nowhere with people all passionate about the art that you're making. I just find it to be so exciting. So it's that. It's new work too. Like I'm always loved like the development of new work, and watching something like from its inception and watching the first Zoom reading it gets, like watching it go to a regional theater or like on Broadway or win Pulitzer Prizes, and seeing that process has been so exciting to me. I feel like I'm seeing a lot of the fruits of that like now, like from when I started like my professional career 3-4 years ago, and it's just been something that I really want to continue to do and be a part of.
I love that answer. That is so amazing. And now we have arrived at my favorite question to ask guests. And that, of course, is what is your favorite theater memory?
Okay, I got this. I'm going first.
Thank God. I have no idea.
Okay, only because my answer is so silly, which just came to my head. Now I'm realizing even already, I'm probably taking it the wrong way. But the moment that I decided that this is what I wanted to do was the very first play I ever did was Charlotte's Web. And my sister was Fern. And all my friends were like the spider and whatnot. And I was given the role of Templeton the Rat because I was told that I'm a character actor with a sense of humor. Imagine being 8 years old and hearing that. And I was like, and I didn't want to do it. But then I like got up and I was like improvising, and I was like having so much fun. And I was like, oh wow, really every role is like so specific and so meaningful. That's so silly, the thought of that, but
that's such
but, yes. Is that ridiculous? Anyway, that is not my like most recent favorite memory. My most recent favorite memory was working on the play that Nita and I met doing, which, you know, okay, I'll let someone else talk. I'm so sorry.
There's just so many.
I love that. Okay. I love a great origin story. So that is wonderful.
Right, like the lore.
The lore. Yeah, it's totally working on White Bitches in Delhi with Ellis. Like literally a year ago now, which is so crazy to think about. But like, actually, like, can I talk about our interview?
Yes, it's our mutual. This is our
perfect. This is how we met.
And dude, so, get this. Then we're on this together, and it was unrelated. Like, yeah. Like when we saw we were both involved, we were like, stop it. Yeah. Okay, go.
No, so I think somewhere in the pandemic, there was like this South Asian artist spreadsheet circulating. So I just put my name on it, you know, and forgot about it. And then 2 years later, Ellis and their team found it when they were looking for a director for White Bitches in Delhi, which was Ellis's Columbia MFA thesis pre-graduation project. And I was like, I saw the email. I was like, hey, would you be interested in this? And I started to read the script and I actually like was crying to my partner like that day, like, I don't know if theaters, I don't know if it's it anymore. Like, I think maybe I'm done. They literally get this email. I'm reading the script and I was like, who was inside my head? Like, who wrote like my thoughts out on this PDF? Like, this is insane. So then we met in the interview. Actually, Ellis wasn't even slated to be at the interview. It was just going to be the producers. But then some like last minute thing happened. Ellis was able to pop in for just my interview. Literally.
Yeah.
And then we just goofed and gaffed the entire time. And I started planning the play. I was like, okay, so I think it's this, this, and this. And Ellis was like, oh my God, yes. And the producers had to like reel Ellis in for being like, you cannot give me this job like on the Zoom. We have to like talk after. But Ellis then sent me an email that was like, well, you'll hear from us so soon, XOXO, like, can't wait to work with you. And I'm sure the producers were like, why did you do that? But I looked at my partner, I was like, so I definitely got the job, right? And they were like, it would be crazy.
Obvious.
And yeah, the rest is history.
And we were just saying last night, we were talking to like a couple of people and one of our actors was like, that was the most just like fun, playful, generative experimental space I've gotten to like be in as an actor, and like, and that's, you know, what I think we bring to this too.
No, it is the easiest time I've ever had on a project, because I, in the same way of this, actually, like it takes a lot of pressure off, I think, when you have like a role like director or like showrunner or head writer, if you have to be like the sole bringer of ideas and whatever. But like with White Bitches and then also with this, like it was so the ease of collaboration frees you up to like have better ideas and have ideas that build off of other people's, and it's just like that is when it clicks in like that, like it has here, it's just like magic.
That is really amazing. That is a great memory. Thank you for sharing that.
It worked out perfect. They got to just yap.
Who would like to go next?
I would like to not go next.
I have mine. I was going to say, which shockingly I found an idea in my archive. Okay. I would say my favorite theater memory is an unconventional one because it was Zoom theater. So I graduated from Northwestern in 2021. And obviously, you know, I wanted to keep making theater, but we had to not be in the same room. So our options were Zoom theater. And at first it was a little bit disheartening to have like my like senior year show that I was really excited about be on Zoom. But my cast ended up just being so game to like try anything. A lot of them were like underclassmen, so they hadn't had like a taste of collegiate theater yet. And so we did this show for young audiences called Still Life with Iris. And it was a show with a lot of like magic and whimsy. So it was so fun generating different ideas of how to make that happen on a Zoom screen. So like, as an example, like we would like pass, like, say we pass these like stickers like across the stage and we had to like coordinate the screen. So like someone else would have their sticker and grab them with hands, so it'd almost be like magic that like they would like grab the sticker from their side of the screen, like we were passing it to each other. And we had to like create like duplicates of props, and we had to, there was just like so many, like so much creative problem solving there that was like very like inspiring and like made me feel like I can conquer anything. Like if I can figure out how to do this, then I can do anything in a real space with real people. So that was a really special experience, and I'm very thankful to that cast, and I feel like that kept me going on this path, and so I'm very grateful.
That is incredible. I love that. Y'all are killing it so far with these memories. This is great. So it's home now. Leanna, hit us with your favorite theater memory.
Take us home.
Well, now I feel like I shouldn't have gone last because I don't know if I can follow up all of this. I don't know. Like I am unfortunately a producer who like cannot enjoy myself all the time, because I'm the producer that I am is like, let's think about what can go wrong always until it's over. And so the memory that came to mind for me was I produced the Fridays at Three reading series at Williamstown in the summers, which is 4 Fridays in a row of developing new work in a 29-hour rehearsal period. And so last summer was the first year that I did that, and I was stressed out for 4 weeks in a row until it was over. And for the very last play, it was a play called Wipeout by Aurora Real de Asua. And it's about these three best friends, these three best friends in their 70s who are trying to like still get new experiences. And so they decided to take up surfing lessons led by this 19-year-old swimming instructor. And so it was a really great play. Everyone loved it. And by the end of the reading, we sold out the 280-seat theater, and it got a standing ovation at the end. And I just remember like watching everybody like stand up and clap for that audience and just like feeling the relief of like, it's over, it's done, and people actually liked it. And that was just a very fulfilling moment for me.
That is amazing. It's a great memory to end on. Thank you all for those wonderful memories. That is fantastic. As we wrap things up, I would love to know if our listeners would like more information about Bardcore or about any of you, perhaps they'd like to reach out to you. How can they do so?
First and foremost, our Instagram at Episodic Theater Project. Got to get that engagement. Should I say my personal Instagram? Sure. If you want to follow me at Melissa Lewin, MelissaLewyn18.
Same. Follow the Episodic Theater Project. Come to the shows. I don't know if I want to give out my personal Instagram.
That's totally fine.
Yeah, obviously follow ETP. And then, yeah, I'm at Neetha, N-E-E-T-A underscore Thadani, T-H-A-D-A-N-I on Instagram and Twitter, if you want to follow me.
My Instagram is at Ellis underscore like the island, like written out, like Ellis underscore written out like the island. Yeah, and you can follow that, my website, etc. I just recently went public on Instagram, so I'm like, yeah. So now I'm like basically a figure.
We'll take that.
I'm going to add my Instagram because you can find me through the Episodic Theater Project.
I was like, you are in the bio.
Yeah.
Literally. It's Liana. My name, L-I-A-N-N-A, another A, and then the letter R.
Wonderful. Well, Leanna, Melissa, Neetha, Ellis, thank you so much for stopping by and chatting with me today, for sharing your incredible production, your amazing upcoming shows, the first of many. This has just been an absolute blast. I truly have enjoyed myself, and I hope you have as well. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much for having us. It's lovely to meet you.
Thank you so much.
My guests today have been the co-producer and co-founder, Leanna Rada Hung, the co-producer, co-founder, and director, Melissa Lewin, the head writer, Neetha Thandani, and the showrunner, Ellis Stump. All of these amazing artists are part of the Episodic Theater Project, which is presenting, along with Frigid New York, Bardcore, now through May 16th at Under St. Mark's, You can get your tickets and more information by visiting frigid.nyc. We also have some contact information for our guests and their collective, which we'll be posting on our episode description as well as on our social media posts. But hurry, go to frigid.nyc, get your tickets now. This is an incredible experience, I should say. I love that one show leads to the next every week. This is so exciting. Bingeable theater. That's going to be the new thing, and they're ahead of it already. So get on board now on the ground level with this great, great show. Again, it's Bardcore now through May 16th. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to
turn off your cell phones,
unwrap your candies,
and keep talking about the theater
in a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.